kaleidoscope of their performance, and what was the result on their career?
Definitely. And in fact, I did come up with a couple of examples, and I've decided to go with this one because they are similar. But it's very much about juniors taking on a larger role. So it's a big step up for them. But, you know, I had seen the potential in them. And let's say they needed 10 of the traits to do the job. I believe that they had about 7. They believe that they had about 4. And this is an interesting point, because sometimes when somebody asks you to do something, it's because they can see the potential in you. And I know I've been in that position. So the result of the junior taking on the role, I mean, they were doing something that they weren't really enjoying or being appreciated. And actually, they'd been stuck in the role way too long. And then I think I had come in as the manager probably, I don't know, 2 or 3 years after they'd been in that role. But with the coaching and encouragement, I think what's happened is that they were encouraged to take the risk, to take the leap of faith. And so they went from, you know, looking after 1 or 2 countries to many countries. And as a consequence, I've seen them growing confident. They're unlocking their leadership skills. There's a drive to achieve. And the more they do and the more successful they are, you can just see, you know, it's like a little flower. There's, you know, much more flourishing happening there. And, of course, the leadership dimensions are growing and they are progressing to, you know, another level. So for them, you know, if I was to ask them the question again now in terms of, you know, what this is what I view has happened to you and this is the way that you have grown, and you get feedback from other managers as well, your other stakeholders, they certainly have grown enormously, so much so that they will go for other jobs and they will, you know, stretch themselves even more. And I guess it's muscle memory, because once you've done it, you think, okay, I've done it now. I'm going to do it again. What lessons did I learn? What do I need to be conscious of? But what is it that I'd like to achieve as well? So just stepping out and having somebody sort of just, I heard this this phrase the other day where, you know, it's just like having somebody holding their hand behind your back, just saying, not pushing you, but just saying, there you go, you definitely can do this. And, you know, if you have a problem, come back to me. And just having that support network as well helps a great deal. So a great success, and not just once, but twice, and with multiple people as well.
And in this particular instance, though, then back to our sort of 6 criteria that we went through, which was the one that you saw in them? Did you think they were safe hands? Did you say they were effective communicator? Which was the quality you saw and thought, this is somebody I know who can step up, this is someone I'm going to, you know, encourage? Was there one in particular, or was there more than one of them?
Effective communicator. Didn't speak all the time. So, you know, if you were in a meeting, they weren't necessarily the ones who would be speaking all the time. But when they did speak, they had something to say that everybody listened to. And I'm sure, you know, people have got examples of that as well. But they would communicate effectively with clarity, on point, and usually bring in something that, or made a connection that the rest of us hadn't done. And if they could do that, I felt that they could learn, you know, the bigger, the wider skills as well. Become a bit more adaptable, because they were a bit stuck in their ways, and obviously they had done the particular job too long, but definitely team orientated. So, you know, building that people's skills is something that you can grow as well. So definitely effective communicator would have been the lead on that one. Yeah.
And you know, that's a great point you make as well. I love that when that happens in meetings, where somebody in the team connects something and puts something forward that I know I haven't seen. And I think it's something that I, again, hear a lot with clients. We hear a lot of this feedback. It's like, well, I don't think I've got anything to add. You know, what am I going to say? It's going to be different for anybody else. And I've just been astonished over the years how team members that, you know, I've worked with have said something and you've thought, genius, that's absolutely fantastic. And they're almost shocked when they find out that, you know, they're like, well, didn't you think of that already? I'm like, well, no, I can't think of everything. You know, it's like, pressure, if you're the senior person, to think of everything is huge. It's just fantastic when somebody connects something that you haven't seen. I think they're fantastic moments in meetings and in business. So great. So let's move on. So we actually, what we're talking about here also moves a little bit to the I in our EPIC formula for impact. And why is impact important? Well, bottom line, everything we do has impact. And, you know, whether we like it or not, every action we take, every behavior we show has an impact. But that impact, of course, can be a positive impact, it can be a negative impact, or it can be neutral or no impact. So how do we know the effect our actions or perhaps our inactions have on other people? Sometimes we know right away, sometimes we never know. And business and life is full of opportunities to have positive impact, or a negative impact for that matter, or also no impact or neutral impact. And we have that choice. And what we do or don't do can be the difference between soaring to new heights or just plateauing where we are. So think about this. Ask yourself, what percentage of work are you happy with to have no impact? How happy are you to have perhaps a negative impact? And then how much do you want to be making a positive impact? And just be conscious about the decisions you're making there. Sometimes it is enough just to pause for a second before you go into a meeting, before you pick up the phone. Just think about, you know, the impact you're about to have. Other times it does actually involve setting aside time, real quality time, to really think about the best way to take an action to have the impact that you want to have. So actually, I'm going to start by asking the attendees, John, a question there, actually. What stops you? So what stops you from having the impact you want to have? It's an interesting question, isn't it? Because we talk about things that we want, and I think most people would say, well, yes, so, you know, you'd like to have a lot of positive impact. But what stops us from actually doing it? So already quite quickly, two things are coming through about confidence and preparation. Although if people are saying nothing stops them, actually, or frustration. Myself, fear of being wrong, time to prepare, hierarchy. That's an interesting one. What stops you from having impact? The hierarchy putting you often perception, company culture, judgment from others, confidence coming back up again, lack of information, time preparation coming back up again. There's quite a few. So some similar ideas there, but also quite a wide range, and that's it's a quite interesting actually, because yesterday, Jan, I was with you at IBM doing a foundation event, and it was really interesting actually to get this feedback. So what was the age group of the ladies? Were they sort of, you know, young 20s mostly? Would that be about right?
Yeah, so I'd say 18 to about 24, because we had some apprentices there as well.
And it was interesting what they came out with, wasn't it? I was very impressed by that response, that they basically said that actually they'd rather have a negative impact than no impact. Were you surprised by that?
No, and I tell you why, because if you have a negative impact, and it depends on your personality, because we had this discussion afterwards, and there was one lady who said, actually, I'd rather have a negative impact than no impact, and a lot of us looked and were like, oh, no, actually, we'd prefer to have no impact than a negative impact.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we chatted about this, actually, and I think the consensus is if you have a negative impact, it might take an awful long time for you to get over that. And so it might, because of the nature of our business, it could be that you're missed out on opportunities or promotion because they say, oh, I wouldn't give that to Jan because do you remember when she did blah, 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 or do you remember her thoughts on this? So I think that's why that came back as a, actually perhaps not have a negative, because, you know, people might not forget. But I think what I would say here as well is that it's learning that we have control over what we do. We're never going to have control over how somebody reacts or how they respond. So therefore, it is up to us to plan our time, because, you know, if there's a company car, or let's say there's a promotion going, and they can only promote one person. If you're not telling your management what you do, and they don't know what you do, but the other person has been really, really proactive in just sending a monthly update.
Keeping them informed. Yeah, yeah.
Keeping them informed, right? Yeah. They can say, actually, I can look at this. This is what she did last month and the month before and the month before. And based on that, actually, I think she's the right one for the promotion. And you could have done much, much more, but you didn't say anything. And so how would your management know? So I think we do have to find a way to, A, make the time, because saying we don't have the time actually doesn't work most of the time. It's perhaps we've got to then look at our work and rebalance. What are the things we absolutely must do? And if there's nothing that I do today, I must do a summary of everything I've done this month and let my manager have that. Because she's going to be speaking to my second line management, there might be a conversation about me. That's something that's worth putting your time in. Sort of ringing other people up to sort of say, have you done this, have you done that? And chasing constantly is, yes, it needs doing, but that doesn't necessarily help you at the end of the day and your career. So sometimes we do have to learn to be a little bit selfish.
Yeah, that really answers the first question here, was it what some of the small ways you've seen people making a big impact? And one of the small ways actually is keeping people informed. It's funny, though, somebody's come in with the question and said, isn't it a poor reflection on management that they don't see what you're doing? What do you think about that?
Yes, it is. But let's think about the manager's role and how it's changed over years and how the workforce has changed. So when I first started working, I could go into my manager's office. I sat outside my manager's office. They might say, would you like to come to lunch? We'd see them in the canteen. We saw them all the time. We were talking much more. Now we are remote. Our managers now, you know, we're encouraged to bring our whole selves to work. And some people really do that. So our managers are kind of, you know, they're social workers. They're trying to win revenue. They've got problems of their own, et cetera, et cetera. They can't do everything. So sometimes think about how we can help them to help us. So a summary on a monthly basis and touching base, you're helping them to remember, you know, what it is that you do. They just can't do everything right now. Not an excuse, but that's the real world.
And it's fair enough. I mean, none of us is perfect and none of us can do everything. And it's such a good point that you're saying there, because you will have different managers who've got different qualities and good at certain things. I think it's also about allowing them to be the best of they are where they so reflecting what they're good at and learning that from them, but also understand there are parts there that are not so good at. And it's funny because I had this experience. Actually, it was a way I managed to make an impact. I really hadn't realized I could make an impact this way. But as you know, I'm ex investment banking, and I had a very in fact I don't think I ever didn't have a very nice boss. So I did really work with a lot of very, very good guys, gentlemen, actually, really. And one of my bosses in particular was a very, 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 very nice guy, very proper English gent. And he was very smart. He knew an awful lot. I learned so much from him. But we'd gone to a meeting with a client, and the client had asked something particular about where an interest rate was trading on the interest rate curve at that point. And I was waiting for my boss to answer. And then a few seconds go, and I suddenly realised he didn't know. He didn't know the exact price of where the market was trading that day. And so I sort of, you know, looked at him, and I wasn't sure, do I say something? Is he about to speak? Am I about to look silly? So I actually just did answer the client, and so said, we've been trading this range, and the curve has got steeper, and I gave a little bit of background of what was happening in the markets that last week. And it was when we were on the train home that my boss said, he said, it's fantastic you knew that. I have to say, he said, I've really struggled with keeping up with the market. And I said, well, every morning I come in, I talk to the trains about what's going on, what they think, what they see. He said, no, I've noticed that. You're really, really good at it. It's great that you have that. We make a great team. And it was a lovely thing. I didn't know that he didn't know it. So sometimes you don't always know what the other person doesn't know. I think you can think, oh, they're senior, they're a boss, therefore they should be doing all this, and they can't. They're also human beings. So I think that's a great response. So back to your own experience though, Jan, when did you realise, you talk about, you know, you just said a minute ago about it's so important to have control of the impact you have. When did you realise that? What was the kind of light bulb aha moment you realised, actually, I've got to be in control of this because nobody else can do it for me?
When I got a coach. Simple. IBM were very good. They sort of said, look, you know, you think you can be an exec, and as part of this program, you know, you get coaching. And I was like, oh, okay. And my coach, you know, in the first couple of sessions, they, you know, well, what is it that you want? What do you want? Why aren't you taking control? What is stopping you? All those sorts of questions. And it was the first time I've sort of delved into where I was, what you know what I've done to date, how I've gone about it, where my successes were, but you know, where my failures were, and was I disappointed that perhaps I hadn't gone as further as I could go, or you know, did somebody get a promotion when I thought I should have got that promotion? And the answer to a lot of that was yes, yes, and yes. But what could I have done differently? And actually, it was almost like I needed permission, and I don't know why I felt that I needed permission. But you know, she said, you know, you can actually do this, and how about this? And once I changed that mindset, it started to just make sense to me. And I sort of stepped into that, okay, the next time this comes about, this is what I'm going to ask. If don't ask, I don't get. What's the worst that can happen? So once I realized that I was in control, things really did start to shift and happen, and very, very quickly as well. And, you know, sometimes I was trying to hide the fact that I was so happy that I'd asked, and somebody said, yeah, all right then. I thought, my gosh, that was so easy. But for ages, I thought, I'd almost talked myself out of, if I ask, they're going to say no, or they're going to ask questions that I can't answer, and then it's going to prove that I don't really know what I thought I know, a bit like the imposter syndrome. But once I took control of how I asked, but also the way somebody reacted, that was their problem and not mine, and that was a big learner for me.
Yes, I like that point, because that's the thing, isn't it? You can only control your behaviour, you can't control other people's behaviour. And so if somebody responds in a way, you know, you've done your best. I always believe that we should remember that everybody has the best intention. And so if somebody does something and they respond sort of negatively to it, then actually you're right. That's their response, and you can't have any control of that. And you also can't decide in advance what that's going to be, because more often than not, people are surprised when, as you just said, I couldn't believe how easy it was. I can't believe all that months or weeks of worrying and, you know, sort of self-doubt, et cetera, and you actually go and do it. And the people are like, yeah, okay. And it's like, really? I've spent all that time worrying, and that's how easy it was. So I do agree with that point. And also, you mentioned that's came through a few times around the questions. People are coming back and saying, what stops them finding an impact? And actually worrying about knowing the answer to all the questions they're going to be asked. And I think that's, again, something that you are almost expecting the worst, aren't you? Thinking, well, oh my goodness, what happens if one person asks one question I don't know the answer to? You know, well, my view is always they say, well, that's a great question, I'll have to come back to you. What would you do when you do? What have you done when you haven't known the answer to a question?
In my early days, tried to fluff it, because that was what I thought was the right thing to do. Now I'll simply say, a bit like you, actually, I really don't know the answer to that right now, but I can get back to you by the close of business. And it's just proving that I can't know the answer to everything. And usually that works really, really well. Hello?
I completely agree, Jan. It does work really, really well. And you know, it's just having that confidence almost to just sometimes admit that you don't know everything.
And you know, it's a fair thing. If you think about some of the meetings that we actually go into now, we're trying to cover an awful lot in a small space of time. And when you work globally as well, we've got different time frames. So often we're trying to speak to people, you know, at the end of their day or very late into the night. So you are trying to keep it compressed, and we're trying to cover so many bits and pieces. You know, somebody might ask you a question about something that actually isn't in your remit, and you can say, actually, I don't know the answer to that, but let me come back to you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the thing is, again, when we're told that, I think I've heard that many times, and I've never thought, oh, they don't know the answer. I just thought, okay, great, they'll come back. It's never ever occurred to me. I think we sometimes forget how we are when we're on the receiving end of that, I don't think I've ever had anybody mind me responding that way either. I don't think I've ever had him say, what do you mean you don't know? That would be quite an extreme reply. Can you imagine? What do you mean you don't know? I might have to try that actually to laugh at my team.
Absolutely.
What do you mean you don't know? Oh, dear.
But can I say on that point as well, you know, on the other side of that is, if you're asked three or four questions in that meeting and you don't know the answer, that's just as bad, because that means you really haven't done the groundwork. So I would say be prepared, you know. One you might get away with, but not multiple.
Yeah, no, that's true. But I have to say, I don't, you know, again, majority of the clients that we work with, I have not seen that as an issue. I've not seen anybody say, actually, I just wasn't prepared. It's a less likely scenario, I think, certainly in the client base that we've worked with over the years. That's just not something I've seen very often. I have seen it in my banking days, though, I have to say. I've definitely seen it then, but not certainly the client base that we're working with since I've moved over to the diversity side of things. So moving on to our C for conscious, we're really looking at this from a beliefs point of view, and there are many types of beliefs. And in this context, a belief is a set of rules or a map of how we operate or how the world operates. And how conscious are you of your beliefs, the beliefs of others and where they come from, such as past experiences, your environment, and how much are your current beliefs influencing your ability to succeed? Are some of your beliefs holding you back? And we call these limiting beliefs. Some examples include things thinking that, oh, I'm not good enough in some way, or oh, I have to be perfect, I have to keep them happy, you know, it's you know, I need to be in control. So all those things that we tell ourselves. But others can also pass on their limiting beliefs to us. And it's a porn client a number of years back told us that in an appraisal with her boss, he had turned around and said, you know, one of the reasons you'll never reach the C-suite is because you are too small. I kid you not. She was about 150. She wasn't very tall. She was a slight build as well. So no, not very tall. But that's a really amusing example of somebody placing a limiting belief on us. And also, contrarily, I remember being in New York with a very senior colleague who was very tall. And I remember him turning around to me and saying, oh, it's good that you're tall. And I remember thinking, well, I have no control over that. What should I do? You know, what could you do if you're not? There's nothing you can do to control your height. So, but it's interesting how people will have these limiting beliefs and they will impose them on us. And then we use that example because it is kind of slightly crazy. So, Jan, when it comes to you, what do you think about these self-limiting beliefs from a career perspective? You know, do you have them, and how have you learned to manage them?
Okay, so I have them less now. I know that. So I come from a West Indian family. If I looked up into my family, lots of them did very good at the work they did, but I was very different. Nobody was going into the corporate world. So they wanted me to do well. There was absolutely no doubt about that. But it was almost when I came to travel and go to a different country, they were saying, oh, so you're going to such and such, and who's going to look after you, and who's going to pick you up, and all those sorts of things that I wasn't really worried about. I was just really excited to go. But not that they were worrying, they were concerned for me, but it came across as if, well, if you do that, then this might happen, and then this might happen. And, you know, we were overthinking the whole thing. And, you know, parents, as much as we love them as well, sometimes some of the things that they say, we hold them as we get older, and we almost go to that place when it's time to make a decision. So, and also, if you don't see anybody like you in the organization as you look up, you're thinking, well, I would really like to be the head of this department, but I look around and nobody else has ever done it, so maybe I can't do it just because I haven't seen anybody else, you know, who have traveled that. So sometimes it's a very lonely pathway, and sometimes you have to say to yourself, I am going to do that, and how am I going to do that? Because actually, if she can do it, well, why can't I? If he's done it, why can't I? And you start asking them questions in terms of how they've done it. And with my coaching, it's kind of, you know, yes, I'm good at what I do. And knowing my strengths and my weaknesses was one of the things that was really, really important. So I am a plant. I am a shaper. I am someone who come up with very creative ideas. But I need somebody in my team who's going to be the completer finisher, the person who's going to say, Jan, you said you were going to do that. Did you do that? And the more I've built those, that confidence, the self-limited belief has lessened, because now, because I've done it, and I know I've done it, and I've proved myself, I now say, well, actually, yes, I can. And I do add value. And if I say something, even if it comes out wrong the first time round, I'm going to say, actually, that didn't come out in the way that I wanted to do. Let me try again. I'm just as good in what I do as the next person. And sometimes people say, oh, gosh, you're going to do that. You're never going to do that. Well, actually, no, you're never going to do it, but it doesn't mean I'm never going to do it. And see, actually, I've got, you know, I don't know, traits or characteristics, I don't know, 6 out of 10. I can learn the other 4 because I know people who can do that. And I'm going to go to them and say, do you know what? I really want to do this. I know I'm good at this 6 things, but I really need help with these 3. And don't be ashamed to do that. Say what you're not good at and trade skills as well, because then you start to value exchange as well. But definitely the gremlin is much, much quieter. In fact, she's almost, I did give her a name at one stage 8 years ago, 10 years ago actually, and she's a lot more quieter. And I'll say, yes, I can. Other people have done it. Why not me?
The gremlin is quieter. Oh, I think that's fantastic. Yes, so actually, let's ask everybody else about their gremlins. So we'll go to a poll. I wish I'd put the word gremlins now. It looks a bit sort of bit sad with how we've asked this. But look, there are five very common limiting beliefs. So what we want to ask you is which one resonates with you the most. And you can select more than one. So you don't have to just jump for one and think, I've got to choose. You can select more than one if you want. So everybody's already voting. But yeah, fill in the gaps. I'm not XX enough. Whatever that XX is for you. I don't want to be judged. I've already tried everything. I don't have enough XXX. One of the most common ones for I don't have enough is time. I think an awful lot of time we think, I don't have enough time. It is a limiting belief. And the final one, which again, I mean, all this has come out actually in the responses from all of you today. You know, I'll be told no, I'll hear no. And actually just share a comment. I like this. My form boss always told me that asking does not offend. Well, most of the time anyway, which I think is absolutely bang on right. Doesn't offend, well, most of the time. So yeah, but we do, you know, it's understandable we don't want to be told no, because it means that what we've done, what we tried to do, didn't get the result we wanted. But you know, not doing it at all is not the answer either. So so give you all a couple of more seconds to vote, please. If you can vote, it is brilliant, because then it really does give us a reflection of everybody on the line today, and it means that we're also sharing. This is completely anonymous. Nobody will ever know how you voted. You know, will never be shared with anybody else. So please do vote so that everybody gets a chance to see the other results. Sometimes it's just nice to know you're not the only one, I have to say. It's nice to know you're not the only one thinking to myself, oh no, it's not just me, everybody else thinks that way as well. So looks like we're pretty high percentage. Oh no, a few still trying to click. I'll give you a few more seconds and then we'll close it and share. And I think that's interesting, because obviously we do, Jan, we do two webinars. One's early in the morning, which hits sort of Europe and Asia, Middle East. And often the responses are very, very similar. It's always very interesting to see that it doesn't seem to matter where in the world people come from. There's very similar responses. So let's close it off and share, and everybody can see the results. So the big winner is I am not XX enough. In some shape or form, we don't think we have enough of something. And then sort of a close second about not want to be judged or not having enough perhaps time, experience, whatever that XXS was for you. I would be told no. I'm pleased that's only 7%. That's good to see that, because actually that's something that a lot of people take a long time to get over, actually, that no word. It's the worst N word ever. And I've already tried everything as well. That's good to see that's low, because those two are, they're quite sort of, I don't know, they always feel quite low, I think, people think that. So think, oh, no, that you really are, you know, that really is quite a frustrating position to be in. So just
Just a very quick question before you go to your tips. We have a few minutes left, Jan. Was a time when you completely failed at something? What did you learn, and did it benefit you in the long run?
So not completely failed, but I did mess up pretty badly, I would say. So back in my finance and planning days, which is a job that I absolutely loved, each month I'd have to go to a meeting, and I would have to present on how much revenue we were going to have in the quarter, in the month, what my forecast was based on going rate, costs, you know, if they're running hot, what I was going to do about it, why was it, all of that, very, 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 very detailed. And I went into that meeting, and I had done a fair degree of my, what I call due diligence, and I did understand, you know, where my revenue was. My costs were the problems, on a particular line, and I think I had, I don't know, four lines that I needed to, because under the four sections, then there was like maybe 10 lines to that section. And I did the work, the staff work, on two, okay? And I went into that meeting, and I was asked a question and said, well, why is that line running so hot? And if we extrapolate, where are we going to be over the at the end of the year? What are you doing to balance? What action should we take? And instead of just saying, I don't know the answer to that right now, and let me go away and apply the same rigor to the other two sections, to these sections, and I can come back to you, I kind of started to go into a bit of a and it was almost sounded like, you know, if the older Jan now looks at the younger Jan, you know, I was trying to make excuses, trying to prove that I didn't know, and I should have just said, I don't know. It was as simple as that. And
we've said this. It's about owning up. I don't know. Moving on. Yeah, absolutely. So that's great. I don't want people to miss out on your tips. We've got a final sort of minute to go, so I don't want to miss out on your three leadership tips. I love all three of them. So very quickly, here are your three leadership tips. Do you want to read them out and explain them as we go through? Why don't we do it that way? So here's the very first one, Jan.
Okay, so I would encourage everybody to be self-aware. Aware of the your working environment. Oops, I've lost something, sorry. Okay, yeah, be self-aware. Be aware of the work environment that you create. And it's, if you haven't heard of the Jihari window, please go and have a look at it. You know, it's what everybody
sees. We're doing it in January, actually. We're doing it in the January webinar, Jan. So actually, hold the thought, because people can have that in January. So actually, great minds think alike, as they say. So yes, we'll be covering that. We're doing it in perfection in January, which I'll go to in a minute. So yes. So yeah, absolutely. Okay. Great. But think about your awareness. That is fantastic. Should we move to your second one?
Yeah, keep your skills current and up to date, fresh. With the world of technology moving at such a quick pace, what skills we learned yesterday almost become redundant. So just be prepared to learn and set yourself a target that says, you know, we do 40 hours per year, but what are you going to learn new next year? What skills? What's going to differentiate you from the next person? Keep up to date.
And the last one?
Right. Know your why. So why am I taking this job? Right. Why am I working for this company? Because on crazy days, you know, when you've had an argument with your manager or something and you just want to scream, or you want that sounding board and you go to talk to someone and they're not there, just go back to, do you know what? I know I took this job. I know I'm good at it. I'm just having a really bad day. Go away, come back again, start and refresh. So know your why.
Absolutely. Fantastic. So we always finish the final thought. Knowledge is having the right answer. Intelligence is asking the right question. And I love that. That really does define the difference, isn't it? Intelligence is asking the right question. And just finally, for next month, we said January 2019, can't believe it, the power of imperfection on the 16th, Wednesday the 16th of January, 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. London time. As always, please do connect with us on LinkedIn or on Twitter so we can share the more information that we share each month. And there is a survey at the end, so please do spend the time to fill that in. We do like to get the feedback. Thank you very much. And a final thank you to Jan for your time today. It has been really valuable. We've had some great feedback already. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you. Very much enjoyed it.
And that's great. And thank you to all for joining us today. And we'll see you all next year. Thank you. Bye for now.
Happy Christmas. Bye-bye.